Good morning. Today is Tuesday, July the 17th. Joining us this morning is the general manager of the Humboldt Community Services District, Mr. Dave Hull.
Morning, Brian.
Good morning. Or why do they say that today?
Is this out of your book of limericks?
No.
Oh, why do we say that
today? We've upgraded.
Yeah.
Who, okay, Mr. Smarty. Who gave the name Amazon to young masculine women?
I'm going to say it was, let's see. I don't know.
The Greeks.
Oh, right.
The word,
I did know that.
The word literally means without a breast. It refers to the Grecian story of a nation of warlike women in Asia Minor. These women were such determined warriors that they burned off their right breast in order to better draw a bow. Doesn't explain the forest.
No, it doesn't. My answer was going to be Charlton Heston, but
yeah,
you know, clearly I would have been wrong.
I believe so. Yeah, yeah. And you weren't that close to right when you said it this time. Oh, what's the update with the drought and the water use and all that kind of stuff?
Oh, the drought and the water use. So this is interesting stuff. Back in February, the State Water Resources Control Board had a bunch of hearings on what they were going to try to turn into some legislation or some permanent mandate on the water restrictions. And they got enough pushback that they actually didn't do that. So drought wise, there's parts of the state that are still considered in some measure of drought or dry or, you know, drier than normal kind of situations. And rule wise, all of the restrictions that we had are off, except for a couple of things. I still have to report water use, so they're keeping track of how much water we're all using for some use in the future. Probably, as we've talked about in the last couple of months, that SB 555 and those kind of things, where they're actually going to impose, they are working on bills to actually impose water use restrictions on all of us at some point. But as far as the restrictions go, we're off. So make sure you keep your trees watered.
So there's no penalty, but there's still recommendation.
It was essentially continued off into the future. They didn't pick a time that they were going to revisit it, but we're all pretty sure it's going to come back at some point in some form.
I would imagine so, just because there are still some areas in the state that
this is part of Governor Brown's making conservation a way of life. Like, Californians don't do that, and we haven't done that since the drought in 77, right, with all the rules and the plumbing code changes and all the rest of that stuff. So, it'll be back. And honestly, you know, not watering your sidewalk and stuff like that, you know, and having overspray on stuff, that's just kind of good stewardship of the resource anyway, right? And a lot of people up here already take good care of resources.
That's right, because we're paying for the mills rate. Yeah. That, I mean, you know, it's a pocketbook issue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When I start seeing cacti designed in the front yard with the rock garden, that's a whole different ballgame.
That's exactly right. Yeah, it's not far off.
So how do the golf courses and guys like that have to have more than normal usage, they just budget more?
Yes. It's, remember, Prop 218 made it so that we can't charge more for one use over another use. You know, it's based on the cost of service. So if it costs the same to provide water to a single family house as it does to a golf course, then it's the same rate. It would just be the difference in the volume. If it does cost more to provide it to some big industrial user or something, then it is a different cost.
So as you're looking at some of these new developments, Dave, that are out there, or that are pending, you know, we got the stuff out of Rex's Park, you know, that you see. Is that anticipated to change water use or just assign it from one place to another?
Well, in fact, the McKay Ranch or McKay Park, Community Park, Forest, It actually lopped off about 700 what we call equivalent dwelling units. So, you know, essentially 700 houses that had been planned in our rates and in our in the whole Martin Slough project and all the rest of these things. So I guess you could say that's a savings.
So that's fewer?
That's fewer, yeah. But fewer forever kind of houses that are available to go out there.
That's not good.
Well,
I mean, as we have a housing shortage.
It's kind of a mixed message, I would say.
But it's a permanently off.
Right.
That doesn't sound mixed to me.
Well, the mixed is just what you said. We have a housing shortage. We don't know what we're going to do or where they're going to go. And we're going to take the few places we have left and put parks in them.
Oh, don't give me that few places left.
We do have a...
Look at the mountain.
It looks like a park. We do have some subdivisions that are being planned out there, little kind of on the fringe of the McKay Park.
The eights and tens kind of thing?
No. Behind Redwood Fields, there's actually a 300-unit subdivision planned for that area. There's some places off of Hubbard and off of Sequoia.
Some sizable ones for us.
Yeah.
Off of Hubbard?
Yeah.
Was that the old lumberyard?
Their apartment things. Well, that's that nothing's been planned for that I know of, but that's certainly a nice big lot. No, this is on the other side of the street.
Oh, where Merle Johnson and his family was?
Yeah, right.
The trailer thing?
Right, yeah.
How many units in there?
It's apartments, I forget.
Okay, well, maybe they'll have a swimming pool because it's in sunny Myrtletown. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Dave Hall. Dave, considering that there might, in theory, be some economic pressures somewhere in the future around here, at least that's the goal of some of us, are we ready? The investments that have been made, that you guys have been doing lately, that the city of Eureka has been doing, that the county's been doing, Fortuna's been doing, everybody's been doing, I know it's one of those build and they will come models, but do you see any indicators that they're starting to arrive?
No. But as you said, the infrastructure is ready and available to be added onto. The only thing that I could see down the road that's going to have to be changed or upgraded, no matter what, whether we get any growth or not, is the wastewater treatment plant that services both us, Humboldt Community Services District, and the city of Eureka. The Elk River Wastewater Treatment Plant is nearing the end of its design life, and the city's been working with the state and a bunch of engineers and things to plan for future upgrades of that. But that's potentially a sizable thing that's coming up. And certainly if there was a lot more growth in housing development or industrial uses that needed the treatment plant, it would have to be upgraded anyway. So, but outside of that, the collection system for the wastewater, the distribution system for the water, those things are all in great shape and ready to be added onto.
What sense do you have if we keep what we've got, but they are like actually homes that are lived in?
Right.
And you know, we start to see that change, or families coming in. So obviously a family is going to be different than a singleton. Is the capacity there for that?
Well, yes.
A population bump, not necessarily number of dwelling units increase.
I think yes to both. We have right now the capacity that we've been working off the last 2-3 years with the wastewater treatment plant for Humboldt Community Services District. We have the ability for about 2,500 more equivalent dwelling units, so 2,500 single family homes or equivalents to that. So that's a huge number. And so
what, 5% growth?
Yeah, I think we've got lots of time to when we're growing at less than one. So I think we've got lots of capacity there. Again, it goes back to maybe not necessarily the capacity, but the age of that piece of the infrastructure is what needs to be worked on.
Is the tax base there to be able to make that happen, or are you talking bonds?
Well, it's going to have to be. It'll have to be bonds. It'll be very expensive, and if the outfall changes, that's going to be at a significant portion to the whole thing too. So
outfall change.
Yeah, right now, it's kind of an interesting sort of a thing. So, as part of the Clean Water Act, there's a bays and estuaries policy that says you can't discharge into an enclosed bay or estuary unless you're actually enhancing some of the beneficial uses in that bay. There's a very prescriptive list of what those beneficial uses are. You know, you could create wetlands with it, you're enhancing fisheries, you're doing something like that. This is where Arcata got to continue discharging to the bay because they made the Arcata Marsh and Wildlife Sanctuary. And so that ticked 3 or 4 of these boxes of beneficial uses. Eureka, on the other hand, took a different tact in that although their discharge is in the bay, it's kind of over by the Coast Guard station, let's say, it was set up so where it would discharge on an outgoing tide. So the state characterized that back in the 80s as an ocean discharge. So they would only discharge when the tide was going out. It would go right out the entrance and off you go. Well, in the last 30 years, they've gotten better at detecting where things go and the dilution factors and all these sort of things. And so the city's been working with the state on trying to determine if that's still an appropriate site or if they're going to have to do something else. If they have to do a real ocean discharge, that's going to be a giant project. So
you mean like
so that's
scary,
that's right in
big massive money.
Yes. Yeah.
So it might be cheaper to
in the
build another pond like Arcata has in Eureka somewhere.
Well,
like
see that's
old shipwreck.
Yeah,
area.
Yeah. Well, it's that's an interesting thought, and this is the thing when I when we were working in the city of Arcata, the wetland treatment thing is appropriate for places that it's appropriate for. Arcata is a good size. It's got good the wetlands are designed for that. Eureka is a much bigger plant. There's a lot more flow that goes into that, so it naturally would take a lot more acreage to make something like that. So
so it really isn't feasible.
I'm not going to say it's not, but I don't know that it's been looked at in with a real clear eye to the whole thing. I think it's been kind of dismissed because it would take up so much land, and where would that land actually be? So
well, and the cost probably associated with that, just the footprint of the land space,
right?
Might be. Yep.
Well, but at the same time, the city has been working with some agencies to actually turn this pasture land that's just south of Elk River. Still, a lot of it's within city limits from there to about where the interchange is to go to Humboldt Hill.
Yeah, down at the base of the hill.
Yeah. To turn that all into wetlands. So they're working on a project to do that anyway, to have it be a tidal marsh. So, and that's pretty far down the line. So turning it back into a freshwater marsh as a treatment marsh probably is out of the question now. But that would be probably the only likely place that would have been available to do something like that. Anyway, and it may have likely been too small anyway.
Oh, really? It's to that extent?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Although that seems like a lot of acreage. It takes of acreage to clean the water.
Depending on how far up, if you run all the way up to Falk or...
if you get on the other side of the freeway, that's a different story. Yeah. But that's another logistical issue, too.
Oh, you're saying just between the bay and
between
the
freeway
highway.
And the bay, right.
Oh, now I understand why it's small.
Yeah.
You're saying, the pasture land and some of the old buildings
that are there.
And the ranches and the farms and,
If you go up Elk River, there's lots of land.
Yeah,
right? Not so much on the bay side of the freeway.
But you still want to have the treated water go straight into the bay rather than like
well,
into
it's
Elk
it's
River.
it's you know, some of us don't see that there's been any degradation of anything having the outfall where it is right now. The state has a different opinion about that, and so that's why the city's working through these studies to decide if there's some modifications they can make to that, or if they're going to have to abandon it and kind of start over.
He said in code speak. KINS News and Information Time's 8:30.
We do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Dave Hull from the Humboldt Community Services District. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, American Ag, and Lolita Cheese. Dave, the consideration of some future regulations that may be in place, it doesn't seem like it's getting any easier. Fair enough. Is it getting significantly tougher? Or has there been a plateau that's been achieved with either water quality or some of the, like, the discharge issues that you were referencing?
Well, I think it's kind of depends on who you ask. I think to answer your first question, there hasn't been a plateau and there hasn't been any drop off. It's every year there's something new to deal with. The drought created a whole new piece of the State Water Resources Control Board that they're not going to let go away. So there's all kinds of things for them to do and data collect and, you know, unfunded mandates for us water suppliers to comply with. So on the regulatory side, it's just always going to be there. On kind of the political side, you get things like the criminal activity that happened in Flint, Michigan. Well, you know, us being the kind of state that jumps, well, I think most political institutions jump on something like that and say, oh boy, we need to do that too. So we had all kinds of unfunded mandates this year we had to deal with to go look at all our service connections, all, you know, 7,000 of them.
Entry points, yeah.
Yeah, to make sure that there wasn't any lead in any of them, which on the surface of it is a good, you know, it is a good thing. But, you know, the rules that says you can't have lead, and they've been around for decades, and it's been something that's been going on and been attended to for a long time. But
well,
we had to
any,
drop everything.
You don't have any lead pipes in the system,
no,
do you?
No. And so that kind of stuff just continues on. So every year there's going to be more of those. And, you know, I think we did a count here about, I don't know, 6 months ago or something. And I think we had like 49 different regulatory programs that we constantly comply with. Some of them are, you know, annual. Some of them are monthly, you know.
And none of them can be automated.
Nope. Nope.
Yeah. I would. Do the electeds understand? Do they get the picture? Has McGuire ever been
I'm going to say this, that the local electeds, you know, that's really where governance, I think, works best, is here at the local level, whether it's a service district or a city or something like that. When you get up to the Sacramento level of things, what I've seen more times than not is somebody wanting to grandstand a little bit, and they'll take an issue like Flint and you know, five legislators will come up with some bill that they want to introduce, and it's roughly written And if it does pass, it just gets dumped on some agency to figure out how to implement it, which costs a lot of time and effort for them to figure it out. And then at the end of the day, it costs our ratepayers, you know, a bunch of time and energy and money to comply with these things. You know, some of them are good things. You know, I'm not saying it's all bad, but some of them clearly are gee whiz reactionary kind of stuff that gets funneled on down to us to pay for.
How do some of the smaller water districts survive?
Well, I think this is part of the issue. Remember the water tax? Some of that was driven by some of the really small little districts that just can't afford this sort of stuff. Now, there are programs for that. The water tax was the wrong approach, that is, as we've all said. But they don't do very well with it, frankly. So they either require some level of support from the state to comply with these things. As you move up, you know, we're kind of in a middle-sized level right here, so we don't get a lot of support from the state, but we're at the lower end of, you know, the mandates hurt a little too. So
as if the population expanded within the district, does that make it easier or more challenging?
You know, in a way it does. It makes it a little bit easier, even though you think there's more stuff and there's more you know, miles of line to deal with and everything. The basic kind of infrastructure, the tanks, the treatment plant, these sort of things, get diluted by more people, so that the cost can actually would actually go down a tetch probably, because it's divided over more people. You know, we're at that line where we've got a very expensive treatment plant, we've got an expensive water distribution system, and a very finite amount of people that isn't growing. So if it was to grow, that gets the economy of scale drops in there a little bit and would work out better.
So if you had that 5 to 10% growth, what does it do?
Here's the political answer for you. I'd have to go check it out.
Yeah, I got to talk to my consultant.
I don't know that 5 or 10%.
Well, how many hookups do you have now?
We have about 7,600 water connections and about 6,400 sewer connections.
So throw in another 500.
Yeah, another 500. It would. I don't know if that gets us over the hump, because that would be for 500 connections. For 500 connections, it wouldn't require a lot of infrastructure upgrade, because usually if they come in a big subdivision like the 301 we talked about, you know, most of that is on the developer to do. We just provide the, make sure the water's up to where it heads into the subdivision. So as long as we don't need to add another water tank or something like that, then it would have that effect of you know, diluting it a little bit.
Water tanks are done for delivery or for storage?
Well, both. Storage, so that you have it so you can deliver it. So there's enough demand in an area that you want to make sure you can't just pump water to everybody's house. You get it up to a high spot, and then you typically let it run gravity down. And so you put enough storage in there that the population that piece of the system feeds can work off of that volume of water. And typically the turnaround in the tank is from, you know, 12 to maybe 36 hours, depending on where it is.
Limited demand. Storage is more of a settling pond, to speak.
No.
Because it's not I know you have a technical definition of that, but it's not spending a lot of time. If there was a major break, it's not going to save your cookies.
That's exactly right. And that's why our district board went through this water alternatives analysis study here a couple of years ago, and decided that we would keep our three wells and actually rebuild the one, so that we had some resiliency there in case something went on with some of the storage somewhere, some of the water supply that we get, because we only have, you know, 24 hours or something. If the tank's full and the line breaks from Mad River, we've got the wells to fall back on.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:43. We will be back.
SoCal just got a whole lot closer. No, we're not talking about some big scary geological event. It's way cooler and with much less tectonic shifting. Starting in June, flying to LA will be quicker than ever with United Airlines' new nonstop flights from Humboldt County. That's right, no stops between here and there. Ascend, descend, and you're landing, like in just a couple hours. So it's kind of like LA is just down the road a piece. So what are you waiting for? Check it out at flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:47. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Dave Hull. Dave, as you are working and now actually utilizing the budget that you've developed, you got the water tank, the painting project, and a couple of other major significant things. Do you have wiggle room? If something happens, whatever the something happens, are you able to be flexible enough now to be able to deal with whatever?
Well, we're getting there. Remember, the rate study, part of the reason for the rate study was to make sure that we had the reserve so that we could actually respond to that. So we're only, you know, we're only beginning the second year of a five-year rate increase program here. So it's a yes and no. On the water side of the equation, we have good reserves, and we're ready to go there. On the sewer side, we've had to spend a lot of increased costs on our obligations with the city of Eureka for both their capital expenses in rebuilding some things that were emergency breaks, and increases to their operation and maintenance expense, which is we have a share of that also. So we're like I said, water's good. Sewer's building back up.
Oh, there's, I'm sure.
We're better than we were a couple years ago.
Backing up, there probably isn't one that we want to use.
As long as it's not plugged up.
Just to be safe. Yeah, we'll do that one safely. If somebody really wants to find out the detail about some of this stuff, visit the office?
Yes.
Is that more effective than going to a website?
Yeah, it is. The website's good, but you know, coming and talking to us, we're very customer oriented, very very good. I think with people that have questions, you know, our board meets twice a month. You know, we're all open for anything. There's a lot of complications, a lot of moving parts, like we talk about every month on here, and so it's you know, we appreciate when people drop by and have questions about things, and we can help explain stuff.
Every once in a while. But it's not like coming to have to understand what rocket science is.
No, but there's a lot of moving parts that I think, you know, a lot of people just don't think about because they just don't know how it works. And so it's helpful. It's more helpful, I think, to sit down with somebody for 5 minutes and have them kind of laying it out than it is to look at a bunch of, you know, kind of boring documents on a website and try to figure out what they mean.
Better to talk to a boring person?
But yeah, well, you point at me.
I think that's what I heard. Thanks for coming by, bud.
Thanks.
See everybody tomorrow.